So this is work that I've been doing over the last, 18 months or so with Miguel Mana in Montpellier. And it actually sprang from an idea of his on a way of handling general nonlinear equations. He's a guy who is interested in hydrodynamics and nonlinear classical waves. And certainly, as you know, a lot of work has been done like this. And our topic more or less arose from these things. So, well, what system are we considering? We are just considering water flow in a channel. So we have something like this, and it's only one dimensional, x and z, the vertical direction. So we have a surface here, z, which is a function of I, of x and t. And there is an average height for the fluid, h. And we suppose there is some capillary tension to make life a little bit more interesting than just pure gravity. So a point here in the fluid has some velocity whose components are u of x and t and v of x and t. Okay. No viscosity. So the equations for this are very simple. These are just the Euler equations. First two, one and two on top. Okay. So this work appeared in the and the archive database under that label on top. Okay, so where P of x and t is the pressure field and g is the acceleration of gravity. So then the other thing is that, so there is a boundary condition at the bottom, which says that the fluid should move horizontally, no viscosity. And at the top, there is just a continuity equation for the position of the surface. Okay, and then there is a boundary condition at the surface which says that the atmospheric pressure, P0, just inside the fluid, so as a function of x, phi, and t, is just the atmospheric pressure minus the surface tension times the curvature of the surface. Okay, bottom is flat, fixed at z equals 0, and this is the boundary condition, says that the velocity, is vertical component of the velocity is zero at the bottom. Okay, so this is a perfectly well-defined system, and one of the first things that you do when you encounter such a system is linearize to see what happens for small waves. Now, when you linearize, this is a canonical thing everywhere. You can find many places. Then you get this linear dispersion relation. Okay, the hyperbolic tangent of the height of the fluid here. Now, this is all you can do. You can do perturbation around in the amplitude of the wave, but that's not very interesting. There are other approximations that people have done, and one of them is well known in people doing hydrodynamics, the Green-Nagy approximation, also called columnar approximation. That approximation amounts to say that the velocity of the fluid in a column, the horizontal velocity doesn't depend on z, okay? So, which is saying that u, the horizontal component of the velocity, is just a function of x and t, no z component. Shallow water is okay for that. Obviously, if you have shallow water and long waves, then the velocity of the fluid really doesn't depend on z. You have compression or dilatation, but first approximation, you have something like this. So I forgot to say that the fluid has is incompressible, so ux plus wz is zero, so that immediately gives you w, the vertical component. Okay, so this is what people call the Green-Nagy or columnar approximation. Now, when you do this and linearize the corresponding equation in this approximation, then this is the dispersion relation that you obtain instead of this. Okay? Now, and then you realize that for small k, obviously the k squared term is reproduced of the hyperbolic tangent, and also the k fourth term, well, one of them it comes from this, and the other one, you see 1 over 1 plus h squared k squared over 3 is just the first expansion, the beginning of the hyperbolic tangent. Now, whether you, how do we get the KdV equation, for example? Okay, one thing, KdV is a long wave, shallow water approximation. Now, long wave means small k, small k, and for small k, you see that the phase, so gh k squared, you get only, and so omega goes like k for small k, which means that there is a finite phase velocity. Okay, so long waves. In the long wave approximation, that's k small. Okay, so omega is about k root gh. So the phase velocity is omega over k, is finite. This should be hk much less than 1 to make things dimensionless. Okay, so V is finite in this limit. So you have wave trains, small wave trains, which propagate at finite velocity when k is very small, long waves. Now, if you run at the same velocity as those waves, make a Galilean transformation, then in your frame, obviously, the fluid is at rest. You see your wave and you move at the same time as it moves, so it doesn't move in your frame. Then, in your frame, if you expand either this hyperbolic tangent or this to next order in k, then you get some k dependence. And that's the basis of the long wave approximation and how the KdV occurs. So briefly, it's here. Okay, this is the so-called multiscale analysis, how you can see. So when you take long waves, k small, you expand omega. This was just the bottom formula of the previous transparency. So V goes to constant when k is small. Then, as I said, you make this transformation x into x minus vt, and you keep t. So you move at the same velocity as the phase velocity of the fluid. Then that kills, in the time dependence, then that kills the k. This is what I said. When you move at the same velocity as the wave doesn't move relative to you. But if k is not infinitesimal, then you have a small residual phase velocity which grows like k cubed. So if you say that k is very small of order epsilon, like k is d by dx, omega then is like epsilon cubed, and then rescale t so that it becomes d by dt, rescale x and t, and then you arrive at some linear approximation to an equation like this, du dt is like d cubed u dx cubed. And the epsilon cubed cancel. Okay, so that's the linear part of the KdV equation. And then, at the same time as you work to next order in K in epsilon, then you look at you go back to the original equation, expand a little further in the first nonlinearity, and say that U is the appropriate power of epsilon, so that here you get also a U squared term. You rescale u, so the first nonlinear term turns out to be epsilon cubed u ux. Then epsilon cubed goes away and you obtain KdV. Okay, so this is the long wave, the multiscale analysis in the long wave approximation. Now the idea then is to say, well, suppose that we can go to short waves, large k, go in the opposite direction. People have done lots of things on long waves. Not much is left to be done there. So, but perhaps in the short wave region, there is something to do. So suppose again that when k is large, you have a dispersion relation such that omega again is like k, so that you have a finite phase velocity in the short wave limit. and then something with then order 1 over k, okay, because omega is an even function of k, an odd function of k, okay, something like this. Then you have finite phase velocity, do the same thing. Finite phase velocity, but k now becomes, is of order 1 over epsilon. The phase velocity, now, okay, now it turns out that, let me go back to the previous transparency. If you go back to the previous transparency, you realize that this approximation here is such that when k is very large, well, omega squared is like k squared, so this is a case where the equation has a limit, where the equation has in the short wave limit a finite phase velocity. So do the same thing as in the long wave case. The leading term omega is like, then becomes, is like k. Again, move with the fluid in the large k limit. And then the residual time dependence will pick up this term, a over k, which means that if you do the same kind, rescale x and t, blah, 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 the dispersion relation will be of this type in these new coordinates. Okay? So completely different. And this looks relativistic, so something that, well, somebody coming from elementary particles like me is interested in looking at. Then you do rescalings in exactly in the same way as you obtain KdV. Do rescalings on the power of U in such a way that you obtain the nonlinear terms. First non-trivial nonlinear terms in the same order. Okay, so it's here. So in the short wave expansion, this is what you obtain. The space variable zeta here is like 1 over epsilon instead of being epsilon because we are in short waves. And then the time is, it goes like epsilon, tau is like epsilon, it has to be rescaled, things move slowly in that frame. And u then, it turns out, you have to rescale the height, the velocity of the fluid in this way, and you obtain this equation at the end. So this was the linear term that was in the previous transparency, and you rescale everything in such you rescale all the time and space variables to standardize these first three terms on the right, and then there is still an arbitrary coefficient lambda, which depends on the relative ratio of the acceleration of gravity and the surface tension and the height of the fluid, blah blah blah, and you end up with this equation. Now, the interesting thing about this equation is that, well, superficially, just like the Euler equation, see, the highest derivatives, the terms with the highest derivatives in x and t are nonlinear in u, so that since those terms more or less control the singular behavior of the equation, you can have some amusing things happening. So this, of course, has a Lagrangian. And it turns out to be integrable. Well, there is some lax pair. Forget, I'm not going to explain how you obtain those lax pairs, this lax pair. But there is an F, see, Lm, you see, these are the usual notations. Lt is the commutator of L and M, so this is the scattering operator. E is this eigenvalue, it's a little bit strange, but that's how it is. F is like this. This is the definition of F. And see, well, this Lagrangian has trivial conserved quantities, energy and momentum. And then the first non-trivial conserved quantity is built with this animal F, which is, and it, here is one. So this tells you that the system is integrable. No, not very. It's a very complicated scattering operator L, but forget this for the moment because we would be more interested in other things from this equation. Okay, so now why is this amusing? Why did I find this amusing? Because for the moment might be a little bit academic, another integrable system. Why would we really care about this? So this is same as before. Now, the amusing thing is that the equation that I had at the beginning, see, from this Lagrangian, forget the nonlinear terms. The dispersion relation looks like a Lorentz invariant dispersion relation in the Lycone variables, x and t, where x and t would be Lycone variables. Now you see immediately, not on the Lagrangian, but I should go back to the equation. Yeah. Let me go back to the equation here in the middle. You see, if you rescale x into k into, I don't know, ax, t into t, t over a, so this is invariant. And if I rescale at this, so this is a Lorentz transformation in the Lycone coordinates x and t. If I, at the same time, I rescale u so that uxx is invariant, so then the transformation of the nonlinear term here is the same as the transformation of u or of uxt because xt is invariant, then this is the same as this in terms of dimensional analysis. So this is also invariant. And uxx is invariant, so ux squared is the same as this. So the equation is invariant under Lorentz transformation this way. So this is a Lorentz invariant, covariant, or invariant as you wish, equation of motion. Now the Lagrangian, which is here, is not Lorentz invariant because xt is invariant, but u is not because I want uxx to be invariant. However, because we have an integrable system, there is an infinite number of Hamiltonians or Lagrangians, and there is another Lagrangian, which you can write in terms of uxx, because uxx is really the invariant here, see, which is Lorentz invariant. So among the infinite set, again, right, among of the infinite set of Lagrangians, which gives this equation of motion, there is one which is Lorentz invariant. So we have a Lorentz invariant theory whose dispersion, which is one scalar field, u or uxx, as you wish, and which is massive. the linear part is the dispersion relation of a massive scalar field in 1 plus 1 dimension. So what can it be? Well, the only thing that I knew up to then was Sine-Gordon or Singe-Gordon, right? Or Liouville. Or a free field. So is it possible to map this equation of motion here into something already known? Well, the answer is yes. So if you make a change of functions from u of x and t to this animal, g of y and t, the arc hyperbolic tangent, so from u, you have uxx of x and t, then you construct this animal, okay, and call it g of x and t, but y and t, but y is defined this way, where f is this. Okay, so you change the space variable as a function of the field itself, uxx, okay, define that as the new space variable, and time is unchanged, okay, and then do this strange thing, you grind through the process of the change of variable, and miraculously you end up with g satisfying as a function of y and t the Singe-Gordon equation, okay, so which has the Lorentz invariance, which is here, of course. Okay, so classically you could say, well, I'm all done because after all, I know how to solve this. This is an old system. So if I start from a given u of x and t, I compute uxx, compute g, compute y, and this gives me the initial data in Lycone coordinates for this Singe-Gordon equation. Let it evolve, and then I can reconstruct uxx from the g at a later time. So this is not much to say there, from the classical point of view, in my opinion at least. Now, if lambda is larger than 1, right, that coupling constant which I had at the beginning, if lambda is larger than 1, then this becomes Sine-Gordon, of course. Okay? And sine Gordon we know has breathers and solitons. And so we can ask, what are the solitons and the breathers in terms of, well, back into the variable u. And there is a moderately amusing thing. So if you take the sine Gordon, take lambda larger than 1, take the sine Gordon breather, sine Gordon soliton, compute the corresponding x, you obtain a singular curve like this. Okay? Pretty strange. That's supposed to be the shape of the surface of the water, right? What? Sorry? Lambda is the ratio of, is the some dimensionless quantity made with g, the height and the surface tension. Okay? Okay? So well, anyway, when you have seen waves, you know, I live almost by the seaside, I see waves every weekend almost. So having a multi-valued solution is not for my surprise. Yes. Well, depends where you stand. but you see, so from a very regular system, which is a sine Gordon, you can obtain something rather singular. And the fact that it's singular, this reflects the fact that the highest derivative terms are nonlinear in the field. So that's how you can have a singular solution like this. What's more amusing even is that you can start from a regular configuration, you see. Let me go back to the previous. Okay? If I start from a small g, then I have a small uxx here. So I could have a small breather, go back to sine Gordon here. Have a small breather. A small breather then gives me a small uxx, small waves, no problem. This is the linearized limit. But if you increase the value of g, then you may be forced to uxx equals infinity. You see, when this hyperbolic arctangent here cannot match the value of g, which is too big. Okay? So when uxx is infinite, then the arctangent is something. And that's precisely where the solution becomes singular, because uxx is infinite. So this is what happens if you take a breather, then you take a sine Gordon breather and let its amplitude become big enough. And this is what you get, this kind of singular behavior you get. See, the dashed curve corresponds to a relatively small amplitude, well, just below the threshold, actually, where the singularity appears, relatively small amplitude breather, sine Gordon breather, and then there is a singularity. If you let the amplitude of the sine Gordon breather become larger than certain value, then the singularity develops, and you obtain something of this type. Okay, so this may be more amusing than anything else, but after all, I think in the audience people are more quantum than classical. And so I want to finish by stating a few puzzles about the behavior of this system. See, let me go back to the original equation here. I have made this change of variable between from u to g, from sine Gordon, So as I said, classically there is nothing more to say really, because it's equivalent to sine or sine Gordon. But quantum mechanically this is very strange. This is a very strange transformation, because you mix the field, the space variable, with the field. Okay, so how is it quantum mechanically possible? What happens? Quantum mechanically, I think it's impossible that if you consider this, the original equation, as a quantum mechanical field for uxx, okay, field equation, then it's not possible that it survives the transformation. I think. And so quantum mechanically, what happens, and what happens to those singular solutions? I would like to understand. There are breathers, small breathers, so one can quantize those, see their scattering and things like that. But when the amplitude becomes big, what happens quantum mechanically isn't clear to me for the moment. See, you mix the space. You mix space-time with the field. How does that? What happens when you consider the quantum mechanical system? Would be interesting to look at. Also, it's a system which is not space, which is not parity invariant, right? Because x and t are the light cone coordinates, right? And when you make an ordinary parity transformation, that means x, you exchange x and t really, because x is really space time. The space-time variables exchange each other when you make a parity transformation. And UXX is not changing to UTT, so the system is not space-time invariant, is not parity invariant. So it's a system it has only one scalar field, massive, which is not parity invariant. Well, and I think and quantum mechanically that would be amusing also to look at, because that means that the S matrix has really two elements, one for there are two phase shifts, one for the left moving particle and one for the right moving one, which are different. So lots of things to work out, but unfortunately I'm a little bit bogged down by various problems which distract me from this. So I would also like to find somebody to work with on this. So let me stop because I promised a short talk.
Thank you very much, Andre. It's time for a couple of questions.
Andre, the zero viscosity limit is quite a singular limit.
Yes, yes, of course.
So I'm pretty sure that if you insert it, the shock wave will be smoothed out.
Oh, of course, yes. But of course, yes. Of course, I mean the singular behavior, as you know, is completely washed out. But also, I lose the fact that I have a Lagrangian theory. So personally, I'm afraid. I mean, this is, you would have to ask Miguel, because he's really interested in hydrodynamics. And if I don't have a Lagrangian, I lose interest. I must say, because I want a conservative system, And then, the problem is that the phenomenology, I mean, using this for phenomenology of waves or whatever is, I would not want to sell that for various reasons, because also the columnar hypothesis here saying that things move, you see, that the horizontal velocity doesn't depend on elevation, it is more or less orthogonal to saying that you are in the short wave limit. Maybe there is another physical system without viscosity, I don't know where, somewhere in solid state or whatever, for which this would be reasonable. But no, I don't know enough about that. Or, you know, in plasma physics, perhaps, I don't know.
For short, steep waves in deep water, you can get to the nonlinear Schrodinger equation as well.
Yes, of course. Of course, yes. Yes, the nonlinear Schrodinger equation, right, that's right. Actually, if, right. You have to go, well. Small breathers. You see, from Sine-Gordon, you can also go to the nonlinear Schrodinger equation. Small breathers. You take the limit where U would be small. U is small, and this is the answer. I mean, this would be take too much time to describe. I could show you in detail afterwards, but this contains the nonlinear Schrodinger equation can be obtained in the limit of this equation. indeed. For small amplitude, you get nonlinear Schrödinger. You have to make further approximations.
Okay, well, I think we'll have to stop there because time is running on. So thank you very much, André. Our next speaker is Jenny Bernard, who will tell us something about conformal field theories in random domains and the Schramm-Lerner evolution.
Thank you.